Hello, 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 everybody. Sorry that it's been so long since my last episode, but you know, we got a lot of news to go over. You know, this is 88 Problems and Sports Ain't One. Welcome back, everybody. In case you didn't hear it in my last episode, I am now a solo act. This is completely my show. So, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a taste of the Kangasman today. We got a lot of news to go over, some Browns, some Buckeyes, some Indians, you know. And we're going to cover it all today. So, you know, let's get things started. First off, let's start with the Buckeyes. Obviously, big news yesterday. Zach, five-star defensive end out of Olentangy Orange in Columbus, Ohio, commits to Ohio State over Michigan. This is a huge get for Ryan Day and the Buckeyes. It was a must get. You know, this kid is in the backyard of the Buckeyes, you know, and for a while he was projected to go to Michigan. So to beat out your rival, you know, for this kid is simply that's a big win in itself. So this kid is very athletic. You know, he takes a few plays off, you know, and sometimes he can be seen as lazy, but he's highly athletic. You know, he makes plays when he wants to. He's going to be really good. I think that Larry Johnson is going to hone his skills. You know, let's get down to it. You know, Zach Harrison committed to us. Frankly, probably I think the writing was on the wall after the 62-39 drubbing of Michigan in the game. You know, that game just, you know, I think it opened Zach Harrison's eyes to what Ohio State's program is all about, and frankly, what Michigan's program looks like even when they're at their very best. You know, he saw that, and it just made the decision a whole lot easier for him. Now, that he was one of the more quieter recruitments. He kept his profile private all up until he was announcing yesterday at 12:30. And, you know, he was one of the tough ones to call, because in the summertime, you know, some people thought he might go to Penn State, and then he turned it towards Michigan up until the game, obviously, like I said. And then Ryan Day just did work. And, you know, I think also the retirement of Urban Meyer possibly helped in that situation. You know, it didn't seem like he clicked with Urban Meyer too much. So I think Ryan Day had something big to do, and that's his first real big recruiting battle as a head coach. He's not officially head coach yet. He will be after the Rose Bowl game. But right now, he's the one going on the road recruiting. Urban Meyer, as of right now, is only meeting recruits when they come on campus. So this is a Ryan Day win. This is a great win for the Buckeyes. Definitely keep a local kid home, as we lost Jackson Carman last year to Clemson, who was the number two offensive tackle and also a five-star prospect in the class. But to get the top kid in the state of Ohio this year, it shows that the staff is making plays for the best guys, not just in the nation, but also they're trying to get the best guys out of their own state. And I think you have to do that for a program like Ohio State. You have to nationally recruit, but you also have to get the best guys out of your own state too. You shouldn't be seeing them go anywhere else. And that being said, you know, we did have a decommitment. Actually, we had two decommitments. Jordan Battle, a longtime commitment, flipped from us to Alabama. Word was as he was thinking about that since December. But Buckeyes did all they could to retain him. It just wasn't enough. You know, he was thinking about going, and he eventually left. So Jordan Battle, we lose a defensive back in this class. We're going to have to find a defensive back to replace him between now and February, the last signing day, as the early signing day has officially passed, or officially passes on the 21st. So, you know, it is kind of a big loss, you know, but I think the staff will definitely get the job done, and they'll get somebody in there to replace him. Secondly, we had DeJuan Mathis, 2019 quarterback, flipped to Georgia right there on early signing day. I think part of that was, you know, he wanted to get on campus early. That was more able to happen with Georgia. So he flipped and signed with Georgia. Another thing is too, big news out of Georgia, former five-star and number two recruit overall in the class of 2018, Justin Fields, who's also one of the top 10 recruits of all time, he's transferring. And the news out of that transfer is that he is looking to go to he's looking at three schools. Ohio State and Oklahoma were two of them. Ohio State is the known favorite right now from most pundits. I saw a report this morning where Georgia Insider was saying that it's pretty much a done. He's hearing more and more that Justin Fields is going to Ohio State. So, DeJuan Mathis, I don't look at it as a huge loss. I think that he wasn't a very highly ranked quarterback. I saw him more as a Joey Burrow type of guy. He would have got there. He's a talented kid, but Buckeyes just bringing in more talented kids over him, and he just wouldn't have got the playing time. Would have eventually transferred. So, not a huge loss. Fact of the matter is, we could be getting somebody even better with him, in Justin Fields. This kid is he can run our offense, the way Ryan Day really wants to run this offense. He's a great passer like Dwayne Haskins, and he's a good runner. He's a better runner than Dwayne Haskins. The reason why for the speculation and a lot of reports saying that he's going to go to Ohio State is actually because him and Dwayne Haskins actually share the same quarterback coach, Quincy Avery, who is a huge fan of Ryan Day. He tweeted a while back that if he had a son that played quarterback, he would absolutely want him to play for Ryan Day. So when you share quarterback coach with a guy who just got turned into a potentially top 10 pick in the draft once he leaves, and he's going to declare this year. There's no doubt in my mind that Dwayne Haskins will declare. You're also close with that guy, and your quarterback coach loves Ryan Day. Justin Fields reportedly loves Ryan Day too. His signs point to Justin Fields coming to Ohio State. So this is obviously wonderful news for Buckeye fans. It's looking like we're going to get a former five-star quarterback who could run this offense, run the RPOs that we like to run even better than Dwayne can. And this offense is going to be even more dynamic with him at quarterback. Now, some of you may think, what does this mean for Tate Martell? I'll tell you what this means for Tate Martell. First things first, with Justin Fields, he's going to be looking to get a hardship waiver. He is retaining the same lawyer that Shea Patterson retained to get his hardship waiver granted at Michigan last year. It's very likely that the hardship waiver will get granted and he will be able to play right away. So as long as with him transferring to potentially, it hasn't been officially announced yet, transferring to Ohio State and the potential of the hardship waiver being granted, he's clearly more talented than Tate Martell. Tate Martell is a very talented guy, don't get me wrong. Ohio State reportedly does not like his arm as much as in this offense as much. And so they're going to go after Justin Fields hard. So what happens with Tate Martell? Well, I'll tell you one thing. Justin Fields transfers to Ohio State, and he gets a hardship waiver. Tate Martell's transferring. That's just what it is. Tate Martell wants to play quarterback. I know he said Ohio State was his dream school. He always wanted to play here, but he wants to play quarterback. He's not going to switch positions. He wants to play. Ohio State tried to play him some this year, to kind of help him stay. He was expected to be the next starter with Dwayne Haskins leaving, although it has not been officially announced. So he's going to transfer. The unlikely scenario where Justin Fields transfers and the hardship waiver does not get granted, I think Tate Martell would at least stay for a year to showcase his talents for other teams. That being said, let's go over what this hardship waiver is. So what happened was earlier in the season at a Georgia home game, there was a Georgia baseball player who had said, who had shouted the N-word in the crowd, saying, "Put the N-word in the game." Obviously, this kid ended up getting dismissed from not only from the baseball team but from the school itself. He issued an apology on his Twitter. So this would make it pretty easy for Justin Fields to get the hardship waiver, as he could say that this is an unsafe environment for him to be in as a young black kid at quarterback. He showed interest in wanting to play baseball there early, so that could be another thing. And with the same attorney that Shea Patterson retained, that he's going to have, I don't, I this guy has had a lot of success with getting players waivers and whatnot and other things in NCAA. So Justin Fields is going to transfer. He's going to get the hardship waiver, and who he's playing for is going to get to see him play right away. And I really think that's going to be Ohio State, which is awesome because, he's one of the most talented recruits ever in the history of the recruiting rankings. So that's awesome. It's sad to see Tate Martell leave. But I'll tell you what, if there's any quarterback I'll take over Tate Martell, it's Justin Fields. And you know what? Let's talk a little bit more about recruiting. It was really refreshing yesterday it's really refreshing when you don't see fans, adult males, angry tweeting these kids when they don't sign with their schools. Don't do that. That's just classless. You're not a college football fan. You shouldn't be tweeting death threats or cursing at these kids. These decisions are hard enough for these kids. Leave these kids alone. Respect their decisions. So that's all I have to say in that matter. Big news out of Ohio State, obviously, Zach Harrison commits. We had a three-star defensive tackle, Jaden McKenzie, out of Wake Forest, North Carolina, commit to us. A couple D commitments and the likely addition of Justin Fields. Moving on now, let's talk a little Browns. So obviously the Browns won their game last Saturday night to move to 6-7-1. They looked Breaker did not look good for most of the for the, at least the first half of the game, but he turned it around in the second half and eventually scored the go-ahead touchdown. Now, speaking of that go-ahead touchdown, Baker dissected that play in 15 seconds in audible, because originally it was not what that play was, which was a touchdown pass to Antonio Callaway. Originally, I think it was called as a run, but he looked at the defense he saw. He diagnosed defense. He moved his running back over physically to the left side of him, and he threw a slant where he saw Antonio Callaway was going to be wide open for the go-ahead touchdown. That's highly impressive for a rookie to be doing that at this stage in his first season, in his first year starting. That's the equivalent of solving quantum physics problem, honestly, because that's just how hard it is for a rookie quarterback to transition from college to the NFL, especially when you're a quarterback like Baker coming out of the type of offensive system that he came out of, which is spread. Now the spread is making its way towards college. There's no doubt about that. Or, I mean, to the NFL. There's no doubt about that. More concepts. These kids are able to have success early because more college concepts are being put in place and they're working in NFL RPOs and whatnot. I mean, look at the success Lamar Jackson has had. He's not a great thrower, but he's still having success because the offensive coaches are implementing some of the things that these kids had success with in college. Patrick Mahomes is a perfect example. And another thing, that's helping Baker is he's getting a lot of time back there to pass. He hadn't been sacked for four straight games up until that game against the Broncos, where he was, I think, sacked at least once. And that just speaks to how good the offensive line has been, and they've allowed a total of nine sacks since week nine. That's incredible. The next closest team is 22 sacks. So to be leading the league in the least amount of pressures on your quarterback is absolutely incredible. It's giving Baker time to go back there and dissect the defense, and even when he doesn't have a man, he's still able to get the ball thrown away if it comes down to it. So, Baker's getting the time. The Browns are playing well. Now they did have a shot at the playoffs. They had a very it was a minuscule shot at the playoffs, Technically, they still have a minuscule shot at the playoffs before that game. They need a Pittsburgh lose out, which obviously did not happen. They beat the Patriots. They needed Baltimore to lose two of three. And, obviously that can still happen, but with Pittsburgh winning, it nullifies their chance to win the division because Pittsburgh had to win out. And even if them and Pittsburgh tied 8-7-1, Pittsburgh would hold the tiebreaker with the one victory over the Browns. So then on top of that, our wild card chances basically got destroyed when the Titans and Colts both won. We needed them to lose in week 15 because they play each other in week 17, and both needed to lose two out of three games. And because of them both winning, that effectively eliminates us from the wild card picture, unless they lose next week and somehow they tie each other when they play each other in week 17, which I don't see that as likely. Ties don't happen often. Now, we have had a couple this year, but I just, it's wishful thinking. But to even be back in the race this long, it speaks to the incredible job of this coaching staff and the incredible job of Greg Williams and Freddie Kitchens to even put us in that position. It was always a long shot. It was great to be in there while we still could. But let's look forward to winning these last two games of the season, and finishing the season out strong. And then next year, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Guys, this Browns team, the Browns are back. I've waited for a long time for this Browns team. The first time I remember watching them was 1999 when they came in the league. I've gone through, I've seen nothing but losing seasons with the exception of a couple outlier seasons. Can you imagine how some of the Browns fans who have been around since like the 80s and 70s feel? This team is going to be competing for a division next year. They will be, I think they could win the division next year. They will be in the playoffs next year. They just need to make some steady improvements in the off season. They got a lot of ways to go. They got to make a few additions on defense and a few additions on offense. We need to get more depth. We need to get better at stopping the run. So there's a few things that we could do. That being said, Browns did get a couple of Pro Bowlers in the league as Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward were voted as Pro Bowlers, with Joe Bentonio is a first listed as a first alternate, second alternate Nick Chubb and Britton Colquitt, third alternate Jarvis Landry, and then fourth alternates Baker Mayfield and Kevin Zeitler. So that's pretty amazing. Another amazing fact. I'll throw this stat out here. John Dorsey has had a rookie make the Pro Bowl every year since 2015. His first one was Marcus Peters in 2015. In 2016, Tyreek Hill, who he drafted in the fifth round, made it. And then in 2017, it was Kareem Hunt who made it. And now, 2018, he has Denzel Ward make it. So that's a pretty incredible stat. John Dorsey is doing a hell of a job. I completely trust him with the decisions that he's going to make. Going forward with who's going to be our head coach and, the additions that we're going to need through free agency in the draft. This guy absolutely knows what he's doing. So hang tight, Brown fans. We're going to be fine, and we're going to be competing for a playoff next year. That being said, let's talk a little bit about the head coach. I definitely think if Greg Williams wins out, there's a strong possibility he should get the job. Why mess up a good thing? But John Dorsey's not the type of guy who's just going to hire a guy just because he got on a hot streak. He's going to do his due diligence. That's how he picked Baker Mayfield, a quarterback. He's going to interview guys, and he should. He very well should. Absolutely, yes, Greg Williams deserves a shot if he can. I mean, even right now, you could still make a, even if he doesn't finish six and he even if he doesn't win out, which he would finish 6-2 if he did, he absolutely deserves an interview. But you can't risk not getting a guy who could win you multiple Super Bowls for continuity. And I think that's the case that people are making for Baker Mayfield right now, is the relationship that him and Freddie Kitchens had developed. And what Greg has done with this team, it's not just this is the same this and this is definitely a coaching thing that he's done, because this is not like the roster is completely different. We haven't made any roster altering major moves this year. So this is a complete 180 on the coaching job, and absolutely he deserves a shot. But John Dorsey also needs to do his due diligence, because we do not want to miss on a guy that could potentially win us a Super Bowl or multiple Super Bowls for staying with a guy, Greg Williams, who could very well, yeah, he could finish 6-2, but he could turn around and completely shit the bed the next year. So we can't risk that. Freddie Kitchens is definitely a great offensive mind. What he's done with this offense is incredible. And I think keeping him would be a good idea, but you also cannot make a new head coach if you don't go with Greg Williams. You can't make that head coach saddle him with his own OC. You got to give him a chance to find his own OC. Yeah, Baker would be on a third offensive coordinator in already 2 years, but it's not really that bad. If the next guy could get the same out of Fred, if Freddie Kitchens can do this, who's telling what somebody else could do with him? Depending on the type of offense and the type of guy that you hire, you don't want to miss out on a guy like Lincoln Riley or Josh McDaniels or something if they want to come and if you're able to hire them. It's just not smart football to not do your due diligence to hire the right head coach. That being said, I could see something where Bruce Arians or David Taub, the special teams coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, are brought in, where maybe they would stick with Freddie Kitchens at OC and maybe very possibly Greg Williams at defensive coordinator, or even keep his son at defensive coordinator, Blake Williams, and then make Greg Williams assistant head coach and special teams coordinator. I could definitely see them going that route. Arians has always already said he would keep Kitchens. I think in the situation with David Taub, that would be a likely scenario where you could do that if that's the direction he wants to go. Because at this point, what you're not looking for an offensive play caller in your head coach. As John Dorsey said, you're looking for a leader of men. So, this is very much going to be a coveted position. Guys are going to want to come and work here. Guys are going to want to come and coach Baker Mayfield. And this team, I think, regardless of who they hire as their head coach, their permanent head coach, they will still be competing for the playoffs and for the division next year. Look out, Bengals, Ravens, Steelers, because the Browns are back, and we're going to do damage in the AFC North. So that's our Browns and Buckeye stuff. I wanted to talk a little bit of Indians with you guys. Indians have made some pretty big moves here in the last few weeks. I don't know if I went over this in the last podcast episode, but they did trade Yan Gomes away, which opens door for Roberto Perez, obviously, to be the starting catcher, and probably Eric Haas to back him up. So that was a huge move by the Indians. They're removing his salary. Yan Gomes is a very much a free swinger. Roberto Perez, while both him and Yan are both great defensively, Roberto Perez is definitely way more patient at the plate. Now, they both don't have great bats. They're not known for their bats. But I think maybe with more consistent bats, Roberto Perez could actually do a pretty good job. He did a pretty good job in his playoff run in 2016. It wasn't great, but I think for a guy like Berto Perez, who has a good rapport with the pitching staff, if he gets more playing time, he can develop that bat even more so than what we saw in 2016, and be a decent contributor as a starting catcher. The Indians pride themselves on the defense of their catcher and working with their staff. So I think this is, while a shocking move, I think this is a positive move in the right direction. That being trade number one. Then trade number two, the bombshell, a three-team trade where they traded Edwin Encarnacion to the Seattle Mariners, acquiring Carlos Santana And Jake Bowers from the Rays. I can't exactly remember what the Rays got in return in this trade, but they got a former top 100 prospect, MLB top 100 prospect, in Jake Bowers, who was listed on the top 100 last season before being brought up. This kid is a young stud at first base. They trade away the power of Edwin Encarnacion, obviously. They tried to go bang with people and hit home runs, and they thought that's what they needed, but they're completely making a philosophy switch back to what got them there originally in 2016, which was on-base percentage, base running, and scoring runs. And that's what you get in Carlos Santana when you bring him back. Obviously, we were well versed in what Carlos Santana does. The guy gets on base, he draws walks, and he does hit home runs. He might not hit as many home runs as Edwin Encarnacion, but he draws a bunch of walks. He always has a high on base percentage. He's younger. He costs less. He's going to cost less to us in the long run. So it's I think it's a great move to get Carlos Santana back for one, and whom they loved in the first place. They didn't want to let him go, but obviously he was out of their league financially at that point with Edwin Encarnacion's contract. And that was some of the problem coming into this offseason, is that they weren't going to have enough money to fill the gaping holes that we have in the outfield and in the bullpen. And with this trade, it frees up now $21 million for the Indians to put into the outfield and the bullpen. You know, that opens up a lot. Now, one of our guys was signed, as Michael Brantley signed a 2-year, $32 million contract with the Houston Astros. So that kind of hurts a little bit, but I kind of see that also as a necessary move. Michael Brantley just hadn't proven been able to stay healthy. Now, granted, he did stay healthy last year and had another all-star year. But at this point, you know, it was just time for him to go, you know. But I think there's still a lot of other guys out there that the Indians can go after, especially with the salary relief now that they have. You know, they were looking at trading their starting pitching from Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer to open up salary. Now, they don't have to do that. They can, if they want to trade somebody from their strength to improve their team, they can just look for the best deal possible. They do not have to trade Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer. So at this point, any deal for Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer, they're going to get the best possible deal, but they don't have to make it. And that gives this team a whole lot more freedom. You know, one of the outfielders they could potentially go after, I think they could make the play for AJ Pollock. You know, he's younger than Michael Brantley. Yeah, he's had his health problems too. But he was able to get on the field a lot last year. And with him being younger than Michael Brantley, I think that could potentially be a really good impact, that young bat for this offense that could grow with this team because of his youth. Not having to trade Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer to open up salary is huge for this team. You have no idea how huge it is for this team. We can keep what our strength is, or we can even trade him and get. Indians are going to ask for a lot back. You know, they're going to ask for a major league ready outfielder and high end prospects, and as well they should, because Corey Kluber, who is a 2-time Cy Young Award winner, has been one of the most elite pitchers, at least in the regular season. Hasn't been great in the postseason in the last 2 years, but obviously we all remember his 2016 run. He's on a very team-friendly contract for a pitcher of his caliber. He's got a few years left on that contract. He's still pitching at an elite level, so he could bring back a pretty penny, as would Trevor Bauer, who is going to probably have a pretty big arbitration case. He's eligible for free agency in a couple of years. And it's probably likely that Indians won't be able to re-sign him, so we may end up moving him anyways. But I think at this point, the Indians were more inclined, and I think they're still more inclined to move Kluber, who's older, and frankly just hasn't performed at the level that we needed him to in the postseason in the last couple of years. So, you know, they both can bring back a pretty big return if we wanted to. But now we don't have to with the money that we freed up with these trades. So do not look at these trades as a negative. All you people jumping ship, stop jumping ship. You know, this front, you've got to learn to trust this front office. This is the same front office that we've had since 2013 that has always made moves They've always seemed to make the right moves and always put us in the right position. They know what they're doing, guys. You know, they haven't made the move yet. And if they don't make any moves with this free money, that all this money that they freed up, then they deserve all the bashing in the world, obviously. But this is not the type of front office that will sit back and not make use of the money that they have. You know, this front office knows what they're doing. They will figure out a way to allocate this money that will improve this team for the long. And I really think that this team is going to still be able. Obviously, this team, they play in a horrible division, so they're going to win the division no matter what. But I think they're going to find a way where they can compete with the big boys such as the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Astros in the American League and get to the World Series again before, obviously, Frankie Lindor is eligible for contract extension and obviously before Jose Ramirez's team-friendly contract is up. So, you know, trust this front office, trust this team, and, you know, be ready because I think the Indians are going to make some great moves. So we got a lot going on in Ohio sports the past few weeks. You know, the Browns are doing awesome. The Buckeyes having an awesome signing, early signing day. And, you know, the Indians making moves with still more moves to be made. Obviously, we know the Cavs suck. You know, they're tanking for the worst pick, and the Bengals suck. You know, I don't really talk Bengals here. I'm a Browns fan myself, so I'm not really going to talk Bengals here. Cavs suck. You know, we're getting down to the end of fantasy football season. I think I'm going to include a little bit more of that into this podcast. For now, we're just going to be talking a lot of Browns, a lot of Indians, a lot of Buckeyes. And you know, let's look forward to the future of Ohio sports. Thank you, and have a good day.